I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome back to Radio Times. According to a new report, the records of juvenile offenders in the majority of states are widely accessible. Few states do a good job of keeping youth offenders' records confidential or sealed or expunged. This access to records prevents many young people from finding jobs, from getting into schools, or securing housing after serving their sentences. The juvenile justice system is designed to give youthful offenders a second chance, a clean start. But that's made harder when a record of their offenses follows them into adulthood. We're joined by Ria Saha Shah, and she's an attorney with the Juvenile Law Center and the author of this new report. It's called Failed Policies, Forfeited Futures. She also leads the center's Second Chances Initiative, which includes the nationwide scorecard, as well as an in-depth studies on juvenile record confidentiality and expungement. And Ria, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Also with us is George Mosey Jr. He's deputy district attorney in charge of the Juvenile Division at the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. He's been at the office 26 years, holding a number of positions there. And George Mosey Jr., nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Ria, let me begin with you, and let me just begin with some really basic questions. What is in a juvenile court record, generally speaking?
Well, because the juvenile justice system is really designed to provide rehabilitation and treatment, the information that's in a juvenile record is highly sensitive information. It can include information related to the child's education background, the child's mental health history, the child's social history, including family history, their involvement in the child welfare system. Of course, it also includes law enforcement records, law enforcement information, such as information about arrests, arrests that led to and didn't lead to any type of court involvement, and then any type of treatment history in the past.
And why is that all in there? How is that used? When a youth is in a juvenile detention center?
Well, the reason why all that information is in there is because the purpose is to find a targeted program for the youth. Once they are in the juvenile justice system, we want to provide them with an individualized and targeted treatment and supervision program. So that information helps to inform the probation officers that are making recommendations, the district attorneys, and even coming up with negotiated pleas, as well as for the judge in order to make a determination about where best to send the individual.
George Mosey, let me turn to you. How do you use those records as a member of the district attorney's office?
Well, it's interesting in the juvenile justice context, my office is involved with everything that Ms. Shah just talked about. But in addition to that, there are certainly law enforcement considerations. And so the record is important to making sure that if a juvenile reoffends, then an appropriate approach is designed to address a reoffending juvenile. That's certainly a different proposition from a first-time offender.
Sure. And I have to claim ignorance here. I always believed that once a juvenile served their time and they were then, in a sense, you know, back in the community, that their record was kept confidential. I'm wrong.
Well, you are wrong, but but the majority of the country probably believes what you believe. And historically, the juvenile justice system did operate under a veil of confidentiality. But increasingly, the juvenile justice system is now more and more similar to the adult criminal justice system. There are harsher consequences. The individual's records are more open. The public has more access to the courtrooms and more access to these records. And part of that is because we're sort of in the age of information and people want to know everything about everybody. And as national security heightened, there was a greater desire to have this information. The thing is that what we have to balance that with is the idea that kids are different from adults, and we do have two different systems. And so we don't necessarily need to have the same level of openness.
And how do you think those records should be handled, George?
Well, it's interesting. When I became the deputy for the juvenile division in 2002, I was surprised that that cloak of confidentiality, that veil, had caused many people to be under the same misapprehension as you, that juvenile records somehow just evaporated once the juvenile had finished their dispositional term. And so I think that the records need to be kept confidential. There needs to be access, certainly, for the people that we've already talked about to make sure that there's continuity of care, that law enforcement considerations are appropriately handled. But I also believe that, and the system believes, that juveniles deserve a second chance. Certainly, it enhances the potential for that second chance to actually occur if people don't have access to what they did.
Would it be fair to say that most juveniles end up in the system for nonviolent crimes or nonviolent offenses?
Many do. You know, there used to be this proposition that there were going to be these terrible juveniles who were going to manifest, and that as a result of that, we were all going to be in fear of our lives, when the vast majority of young people make bad choices. But they're probably choices that the vast majority of us have at least contemplated. When that happens, I think it's easy enough to rectify whatever caused the problem, to make sure that juveniles who, as a general rule, don't reoffend will not reoffend. And if that's the case, then we should be able to make sure that what it is that they did is not used against them in the future.
As the two of you are talking, Rhea, I remember a couple of decades ago, this word super predator mm-hmm. appeared, and this was a time of probably higher crime rates than we have now. Is that what we're talking about here?
Well, after, you know, this was late 80s, early 90s, and there was an increase in drug and gang activity, and there were a few criminologists that decided that there was going to be the super predator that, as George mentioned, we all had to be in fear of. In actuality, the numbers, the trend has decreased quite a bit in terms of juvenile crime. Juvenile crime has gone down steadily.
But people don't know that.
And as I mentioned before, because the juvenile justice system is now more closely mirroring the adult criminal justice system, the stigma attached to being involved in the juvenile justice system is also very similar to being involved in the adult criminal justice system.
Let me go to this study that you did looking at every state, and we'll talk about the three states here, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, but you looked across the country to see how each state deals with this issue of juvenile records. What was the criteria you were using?
Well, we measured the state's laws against what we believe to be standards or an optimal system for record protection. And what that meant is that we wanted to ensure that all records are eligible for expungement. That means that they are completely destroyed at some point, and that along the way, before they are even eligible for expungement, that they are sealed. That means closed to the public. There may be a need for law enforcement to have this information, but we really wanted to ensure that records, while they are still may be available to law enforcement, are closed to the public so that they cannot be used against youth once they've exited the system.
For instance, if someone is applying to school or wanting a job, it would be closed to, for instance, a prospective employer?
Correct. And the reasoning behind that is because we wanted to make identify these states that are doing this, because what they're doing is ensuring that kids are having these opportunities and that their record isn't limiting them and they're not tainted by this experience that happened in their past. So once they've completed their time, so to speak, once they've gone through the juvenile justice system and a court has determined that they are rehabilitated and have gone through their supervision time, that now they have emerged from the system and can become a contributing, valuable member of society.
Is that something you support, George?
It certainly is. And as I said, you know, when I became the deputy, I was surprised that people didn't understand the law that governed juvenile expungement. And we've really encouraged it. I believe that, you know, in addition to the stick, young people need to know about the carrot. And if there's the potential to have a case where you were actually determined to have committed the act, were in need of supervision and treatment and rehabilitation, you did what you were supposed to do, to have the opportunity to have all that erased, wiped away, young people need to know that. I think it encourages them to stay on the straight path.
Do you think lawyers know this as well? I mean, what role do they play?
And when I said people didn't know, I'm including the lawyers.
You are.
Some judges, people across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania who were in positions to really encourage young people to take advantage of the law, really didn't know the law to do that.
And why is that? I mean, if lawyers don't know the law or judges don't know the law.
Well, we live in a state where one county actually abused the law to the point where it became a national highlight, Luzerne County.
Oh, sure.
And so what I found out about the people in Luzerne, the professionals in Luzerne, is that they didn't know the Juvenile Act. They didn't know the juvenile court rules of procedure. They didn't know what they needed to know in order to effectively work with juveniles. And so, unfortunately, that is true, or it was true, across the board in many instances.
Well, I'm back to you, Aria. And I mean, do you see this as something that should be initiated by the juvenile and their family, or is this something that is a more sort of policy-wide? We'll be talking about various states and what they have done. Does it require a more national perspective or approach?
Unfortunately, there's a lot of variation among the states, and what that means is that a 15-year-old with a record in Pennsylvania could suffer very different consequences than a 15-year-old with a record in New Mexico, and that record may last longer in one state or the other, and that's just by geography. And so what we're trying to do is the reason for this study was to really shed light on what's happening across the country so that advocates can use this as a tool in order to reform their systems and ensure that more kids are being able to take advantage of these opportunities.
In fact, New Mexico got the highest grade in this report.
Right. We rated on a 5-star system. While no state received 5 stars, New Mexico received 4. And that was the highest score that they could have received.
And who received the worst score?
Idaho scored at the bottom. Idaho was in at the very bottom and the only state that received 1 score. And one of the major reasons for that is that there's absolutely no confidentiality of juvenile records in Idaho. What? Juvenile records are treated very similarly to adult records. They're posted online.
Let me pick up on that. And Georgia, Aria said this several times, which is that the juvenile justice system more and more has been mirroring the adult justice system. How come?
Well, I don't know that I agree with that. I think that what she may be referring to is the fact that when young people commit serious offenses, when they hurt people, when they commit violent acts, then there's the potential for them to wind up in the adult system. And 1997, the law changed in Pennsylvania and created a scenario where the act actually dictated where the case originated for 15-year-olds. And so if a 15-year-old commits a robbery with a deadly weapon, that case is going to be in the adult system. That's where it originates. And in terms of juvenile justice in Pennsylvania, we use a balanced approach to restorative justice, which I think has the best interest of the child and the community at heart. I think it's a very appropriate system. And I don't think it at all mirrors the adult system.
And I want to pick up on that. I do want to first, though, take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's George Mosey Jr. He's Deputy District Attorney in charge of the Juvenile Division at the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. Also with us is Ria Saha Shah, and she's an attorney with the Juvenile Law Center, author of a new study just out called Failed Policies, Forfeited Futures, calling for efforts to keep confidentiality when it comes to juvenile offenders' records. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The juvenile justice system was established to give young offenders a second chance after serving their time. But what about the record of their offenses? A new report from the Juvenile Justice Center here in Philadelphia found that in many states, those records have not been expunged or kept confidential, making it hard to get a job, an education, and much, much more. And again, talking with Ria Saha Shah, an attorney with the Juvenile Law Center. I should give the correct name, the Juvenile Law Center. Also with us, George Mosey Jr., Deputy District Attorney in charge of the Juvenile Division at the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. And you can give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Questions or comments or stories. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Joining us now is Dina Lexine Sarver. She's a medical assistant in St. Lucie County, Florida. Married, has 2 children. She was charged with grand auto theft when she was 15 years old. She served 6 months in a residential juvenile detention center, and her records have been preventing her from pursuing a career as a nurse. And Dina, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, why do you want so much to be a nurse?
Well, I wanted to be a nurse. It was always a dream of mine since I was four. I wanted to be a neonatologist, actually. And then when I found out that the appropriate steps was for me to become a nurse practitioner and then I could gradually move up to be in the neonatal unit, I was sold. So it was just something I can't tell you exactly where it originated from, but ever since I was a little girl, it was always a dream of mine.
Well, let's go back to when you were 15 years old. What happened that you got arrested for auto theft?
I was defiant. I was a runaway, hanging out with the wrong crowds. I'm disrespectful to my mother, who was recently divorced from my father. And so, you know, I just reacted in the wrong way. And then I started committing crimes at the age of 12, actually. And when I turned 15, shortly after my birthday, I was arrested for the Grand Theft Autos in June of 2007.
And how long did you serve in a juvenile detention center?
I did 6 months in a juvenile residential facility.
And how did you turn your life around? Because you clearly have.
Well, in the residential facility, I was pregnant. So I was 15, and the facility in Florida was very helpful in getting me to transition. But it was just a personal promise I made to myself, my parents, my child, that, you know, I wasn't going to resort back to the same person I was. And once I got out, you know, that's when I was on the path. I was like, I'm going to do right. And I put my head in the books, and then from there, everything just fell into place. I graduated. I got my GED, got an Associate's of Science and Associate's of Art. Next week, I'll graduate with my bachelor's. And so it was just, thank you. It just progressively led me to want to do better.
But you have run into a bit of a roadblock because of your records. What's happened?
With my juvenile record, and I'm speaking only in Florida. I'm not familiar with the other states, but I'm sure Raya was able to elaborate on that. I've experienced a lot of barriers. For instance, I'm unable to chaperone with my son on regular school field trips. I'm unable to pursue certain healthcare careers such as nursing. I had to give up my seat last year after I got accepted into the nursing program. This is after I had already informed my employer that I was leaving. And because of my juvenile record, they didn't allow me to sit for the program. This year, I was almost prevented from graduating with my bachelor's degree from taking my final class because my juvenile record posed as a barrier. And this is simply because it's available on public records. And again, this is just speaking for Florida.
Well, as I said, as you just said, Dina, you're calling us from Florida. Is what recourse do you have? What can you do, if anything, to get those records kept confidential or even expunged? And then I do want to get our two guests here in here to join our conversation as well. But what options do you have, Dina?
To be honest, I'm almost suffocating in society. There aren't any options for me because in Florida they have an expungement process depending on the level of offenses and how long, what kind of residential facility, whether it's moderate or maximum, you would either get your record automatically removed from the public system database at age 24 or 26. However, after you've reached that birthday, the records are still on file with schools, you know, such as the school board, nursing agencies, licensing boards, you name it, housing agencies, any place that conducts a level 2 FBI fingerprint background check will have access to those records no matter if it's available publicly or not.
And how old are you, Dina?
I'm 22.
You're 22. So what you did, this Grand Theft Auto was what, about 7 years ago? Let me get Rhea back in on the conversation. Is this what you're talking about?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, Dina is one of the numerous individuals with whom we've spoken who has benefited from the juvenile justice system, and that, you know, she did come out of it with an idea that she wanted to do better and she wanted to pursue the career that she had dreamed of having her entire life. And unfortunately, her record is really causing a major barrier for her. You know, one of the things is that, two things. One is that Florida is very similar to all the other states. In fact, Florida comes right in the middle in terms of our rating system at 3 stars, and that was a national average. But the second thing is that we need to keep in mind is that, you know, Dina is one of many people that is really working to try to make it better, and this record is really getting in her way.
George, let me get you back into the conversation. I know you don't know Dina's case particular, but using her as an example, so it's been 7 years. Is there a point at which you think a juvenile's record should be, assuming they have, you know, they have not had any involvement with law enforcement, assuming they've been clean, that at some point that record gets expunged?
If Dina was in Pennsylvania, 5 years after she completed supervision, she would have been eligible to petition the court for expungement. And if she had not been involved in any subsequent delinquent or criminal conduct, she would be entitled to have her record expunged. At age 18, even though the 5 years haven't passed, if she's no longer under supervision, she can petition the court to have the record expunged. And if the Commonwealth, that's me,
right,
if we agree, the record can be expunged. And that's because 18 is a pivotal age. You're applying for jobs or training, as is the case with Dina. She's trying to get into school. We would have agreed to expungement under the circumstances that she's described.
Using Pennsylvania as an example, how hard is it to petition? I mean, does it require filling out lots of paperwork and having a lawyer represent you, for instance?
It's good to have a lawyer represent you, but you can do it pro se, which means that you do it without a lawyer. I'm happy to tell you that my friends at the Defender Association will do a petition for expungement free of charge for anybody who is in the juvenile justice context.
Dina, going back to you, so what options do you have? You, as you said, since you're 4 years old, you wanted to be a nurse.
Well, to be honest, if I could just address what Attorney Mosley said, the problem with in my particular case is not the expungement, because I can easily wait until my 24th or 26th birthday. But because there are so many agencies who are allowed to do level two background checks, it doesn't matter if my record is expunged or not. They'll still have access to those records as long as a fingerprint is conducted with the FBI. And this is up until I reach 40, 50, 60 years of age. And we found that out with the Juvenile Law Center when this gentleman had that issue at age 60. So for me, there's not a lot of options. Although I am graduating with my bachelor's next month, I've had to change my career course more than four times just trying to find an avenue that would accept me with my youthful indiscretion. And, you know, that's hard because, you know, on an application, technically I can put that I've never been arrested because as a juvenile, I was adjudicated delinquent. But when they do the background checks and they see all this information populate, it's almost as if I lied because this information is just so readily available to them.
You're nodding your head, Rhea. Go ahead.
Right. And I think that that's the thing that we need to remember here is that that's why we looked at both confidentiality as well as expungement in scoring the states. Because once information is out there, especially in the digital age that, in which we live, once information is out there, it is there. It's cached and it's stored. It's in people's memory, if nothing else. And so it's really hard to recall that information. So as effective as an expungement statute might be in any state, if the information is readily available to the public or to employers, the damage is already done. And so we really need to make sure that records are protected, you know, at the outset and not just, well, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years from after a case is closed.
Do you want to weigh in on that, George?
Well, under Pennsylvania law, there's actually a provision that would cause an employer to not be able to use the information. And I think that's important. I don't know whether Florida has such a provision. Even in the case that we're discussing, I think it took too long for her to get to expungement.
Mm-hmm.
But after expungement, there ought to be a way to say that even if you find this, you can't use it in a formal, systematic way, which seems to be what's happening to this young lady.
Dina, anything you want to say before we say goodbye to you?
I just wanted to say thank you for having me. But just on the last commentary, you know, with Florida being an at-will employer, you know, at-will state, they don't really need to give me a reason as to why they don't want to hire me. If the information is there, they can come to whatever necessary conclusions. And so that's why it's so important for me to share my story, to just, you know, make sure I reiterate the message. The juvenile justice system works. I'm proud to say that I'm an example and I use all of the resources available to me. However, you know, with the aftermath, it's almost debilitating. And it's just so important for us to just get these stories out there of other individuals in my situation as well, so that, you know, there is a path that we can take to become productive members of society.
Well, Dina Lexine Sarver, thank you for joining us on Radio Times, and good luck to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. We have a Facebook comment from Jennifer saying, she says, "Hey, Marty, this is true and very unfortunate. I found myself out the hard way after years of hard work and new direction. My juvenile record bit me with a corrections position in New Jersey. I was devastated. A lawyer will cost anywhere between $700 to $1,000 to expunge my record. Forms are available free to the public, but the packet is about 50-plus pages thick. It can be very intimidating and overwhelming for the average person." Can you talk a bit about New Jersey?
Sure. Well, one thing, you know, that's really exemplified in that comment is how difficult it is. And that's across the board, not just in New Jersey, but even in Pennsylvania, although there is a way to get a record expunged pro se, just navigating that system is really difficult. And knowing that this mechanism even exists is difficult. As George mentioned earlier, we have attorneys and judges who aren't aware of the law, and yet we expect kids 5 years after they've exited the system to then remember that they have this mechanism so that they can take advantage of an expungement. So that's one thing. In terms of New Jersey scored, average as
better
well.
Better than Pennsylvania and Delaware, right?
A little bit better than Pennsylvania and Delaware. And part of the reason why is because the expungement statute is available to more offenses in New Jersey, and the only thing is that many sealed records are available still to individuals, and so we are concerned about the level of accessibility for the records in New Jersey as well.
And I'm looking here, confidentiality, expungement, and those are the two sort of major then criteria as you look from state to state.
Yes, exactly. So we looked at confidentiality of records, you know, during the court proceedings as well as immediately after court proceedings before expungement eligibility, and then we looked at expungement eligibility. And one of the things that we looked at when we were calculating the scores for expungement and measuring those scores is how difficult it is for a youth to actually obtain that and whether there's a fee. Many states impose a very large fee, and that doesn't even account for any fees that might be required to hire an attorney to assist in that process, or whether the burden is solely on the youth in order to file a petition, or whether the court can do this automatically. And finally, one thing that we looked at was the notification. This was something that we really feel is important because kids need to be aware that these records exist, that they can affect them, and that they can have them sealed or expunged. And a very small minority of states actually put that into statute, mm-hmm. where kids are being told what's going on with their records.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. To you, George Mosey, then, picking up on what Ria Shah just said, should the responsibility then be on the youth or their parents, or do you think states should be more proactive in telling, let's say, using our guest Dina's example, so be more proactive telling them this is what you can do, these are the procedures that you need to follow?
As I said earlier, I think it's the carrot that we haven't publicized. And so I think it's very important. I think it's incumbent upon us to inform young people and their parents about the opportunity to have the record expunged, and more than that, to talk about how it can happen. Mm. For years, Bob Listenby, who was the chief of the juvenile unit in Philadelphia and who is now the administrator for the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention at the federal level, used to go and present to each and every young person returning from placement. And one of the things we would emphasize is this is what you need to do to be eligible to have your record expunged. It's interesting that the study does a really good job of identifying what the law says. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it would be great to know what happens in practice, because even when you have great laws, that might not manifest in people actually getting their records expunged if they're not being told about the law.
Let me go back to you, Ria, and go back to Pennsylvania, another of the obvious 50 states that you mm-hmm. looked at. What did you find when it came to Pennsylvania?
Well, again, as George just mentioned, what's written in the law is not always what's actually happening in practice. And unfortunately, that's probably the next step of our research into this issue. the Pennsylvania actually has decent confidentiality in expungement statutes, and some counties are doing it really well, and some counties are doing it really poorly. Philadelphia is actually doing it exceptionally well when it comes to expungement. The Defender Association is on top of it, and they monitor records, and they have a great partnership with the District Attorney's Office, and this has been going on for a number of years. But as I mentioned before, this is justice by geography, because a youth in Philadelphia may have access to this information, may know that they have the ability to get their record expunged and have the PD's office doing it for them and district attorneys that are going to agree with it. But if you're in a different county of Pennsylvania or in another state, you won't have that same option.
I mean, is it really then the relationship between the PD and the DA's office that it gets done more effectively and carefully and well?
Sometimes, and based upon Pennsylvania statute, which requires consent of the district attorney, you know, at any age or even after the 5-year mark, there is sort of that requirement. But, you know, statutes in other states don't have that same requirement.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is. I mean, in certain ways, it sounds like, George, it's about a relationship that you have with the public defender's office.
Well, I think that helps. But frankly, the way that our Superior Court has interpreted the expungement statute, if a young person does what they're supposed to do, then there's very little that I can do to prevent it. The key is that the petition has to be filed.
Right. Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation, talking about an important issue, one that probably doesn't blare headlines. We are talking about the juvenile justice system and the fact that it's designed to give young offenders a second chance. And the question is, what happens to the record of their offenses? A new report from the Juvenile Justice Law Center here in Philadelphia found that in many states, records have not been expunged or kept confidential, and that makes it hard to get a job or get an education or perhaps even buy a house. I'm talking with Rhea Saha Shah, an attorney with the Juvenile Law Center, and George Mosey Jr., Deputy District Attorney in charge of the Juvenile Division at the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The juvenile justice system is designed to give youthful offenders a second chance, a clean start, but that's harder when a record of their offenses follows them into their adulthood. Again, talking with George Mosey Jr., Deputy District Attorney in charge of the Juvenile Division at the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. Also with us, Rhea Saha Shah, an attorney with the Juvenile Law Center, author of this new study looking at all 50 states called Failed Policies, Forfeited Futures. She also leads the Law Center's Second Chances Initiative. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499 and a bunch of comments as well. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also put a comment on our Facebook page, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. In fact, Rhea, let me read a comment from Brahman. He says, I work with youths in Delaware who are dealing with these issues. I work on resocialization programs that help juvenile offenders to try to get job opportunities in an effort to supersede their records. We try to build up their credibility. We haven't talked about Delaware, but I want to throw that state in. Also, you know, here he is trying to get young people to have the skills to get a job, but will this record follow them in Delaware?
Unfortunately, yeah, the record will follow them in Delaware. The confidentiality statute that we found in Delaware has many exceptions to confidentiality. Information is readily accessible to the public. For certain offenses, any individual in the media that wants to obtain the information can also get the information. And there's no expungement in Delaware, even though it says,
really?
The statute says that there's expungement. In effect, what's actually happening is records are being sealed, but only sealed to some people. So even records that are supposed to be completely inaccessible are still available for certain circumstances and for certain offenses.
George, I was curious whether, from your perspective, the fact that there are these barriers to juvenile offenders once they serve their time, does that in any way cause recidivism? Or if someone can't get a job or has a hard time getting an education or can't get a house or something like that, does that add to the problem of crime in this country?
You know, if any elected district attorney is concerned about what they should be concerned about, public safety, then certainly they're concerned about reentry. They're concerned about not just rehabilitation at a facility, but rehabilitation in the community. And the fact is that if we're going to be viable, law-abiding citizens, then we need to be able to earn a living. We need to be able to do the things that not only give us pleasure, but that make our families proud. And if we put barriers in the way of people actually being able to accomplish those things, then we've probably contributed not to public safety, mm-hmm. but to increased crime.
Increased. Do you agree with that, Rhea?
Most definitely. And I also think that, you know, we're investing a lot in terms of the juvenile justice system. We're investing a lot of resources in making sure these kids are getting back on track, and then we're setting up roadblocks to ensure their failure.
Let me get to, it looks like, Catherine from Hopewell, New Jersey, to join us on Radio Times. Catherine, go ahead. You are on the air. Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I had a 15-year-old son that got into some trouble, and what I have found is that I have trouble with my background checks because of his background.
Why? Can you explain more, Catherine?
Well, I just, having applied for certain jobs in the past, I have had situations on the job where information about my son has come up.
So people had access to information about your son, and you felt that it was used, what, against you?
Yes, against me, in a negative way on the job for me.
Catherine, let me give Rhea a chance to respond, and also George as well. Are you surprised? I mean, does that seem unusual to you?
Well, I am surprised that it would be used against you in terms of your employment. I think that what this is telling us is that a juvenile record is stigmatizing, and therefore it can have an effect on a child's family. We know that certain records of certain offenses, for example, can disqualify entire families from public housing, but the circumstance that you're speaking of, I'm not as familiar mm-hmm. with, but I will say that it demonstrates how stigmatizing even juvenile records can be.
But I'm wondering if records are open and people can access, maybe not your neighbors, but then it does become public information, doesn't it?
Right. And anytime a record is available online, you know, somebody can Google a name, and that can lead to additional members of the family that might raise a red flag for any employer or somebody.
Your thoughts, George?
Well, I think it's consistent with the discussion about at-will propositions, where an employer can base a decision on whether to employ somebody or not on just about anything. It can really be arbitrary. And so if the information is available, employers can potentially use it however they see fit. Mm-hmm. So the really important lesson here is that we need to have juvenile records expunged.
Let me get Mac from Downingtown to join our conversation. Catherine, thanks for the call. Mac, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, my question is, I've heard the term child, youth, young person bandied around. What's the age that we're going to cut off this discussion? 16? 17? If you're 18 years old, you're old enough to vote and join the armed forces. And it seems to me that even with the young lady from Florida, if you're 15 years old, mm-hmm. you know that you're not supposed to steal cars. So why are we so worried about the fact that she's a car thief? It's going to affect her.
Well, but let me ask you, Mac, though. She's 15 years old. She served 6 months in a juvenile detention center by pretty much all criteria. She has turned her life around. She's married. She's pursuing a career. How much should that follow her into her adulthood? Forever?
She is a demonstrated thief. If I've got to hire her, do I want to hire somebody who has shown that she has the propensity to steal?
But let me challenge you on that, because this is what we're talking about. Something happened 7 years ago. She was 15 years old. She admitted that she was running wild at the time. But she has turned her life around. Do you not believe in rehabilitation?
I do, but at 15, you know that stealing is a crime. I don't feel a whole lot of sympathy for her. If she was 11 or 12, sure. If she's 21, and I don't know how far the system how old the system goes, but the older you get, you know when you're violating the law, and you need to know that there are consequences.
Well, there were consequences for her. She did what she was supposed to do.
But so many of these kids are saying, "Oh, I can do it until I'm 18, 19, 20."
But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about someone who followed the law. Let me give Rhea a chance to respond to your comments. Mac, hold on.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought this up, because I think that what we need to remember is that there is a juvenile system and there's an adult system. And George talked about this earlier, in that sometimes offenses are so serious that there will be a determination made that we need to transfer the youth into the adult system. Typically, kids up until the age of 18 are in the juvenile justice system. If they commit an offense and they're under the age of 18, in some states that varies a little bit, but typically if they're under the age of 18, then they're in the juvenile justice system. And what we know and what the Supreme Court has told us is that kids are different from adults, and that they have the ability to be rehabilitated in a different way than adults do. And, you know, I would challenge Mac in saying that, you know, are you the same person that you were when you were 15 years old? I know I most certainly am not the same person that I was when I was 15. And while I may not have made choices that had resulted in criminal prosecution, I certainly wouldn't want anything I did at 15 that was a stupid mistake to have followed me for the rest of my life.
Mac, let me give George a chance to respond as well.
Yeah, I'm also happy that you raised this. And I would clarify that for me, it's never a mistake. I'm with you, Mac. She knew what she was doing. It was completely wrong. And what we're talking about today is in no way meant to excuse what it is that she did. All we're talking about is not having this thing hang over her head for the rest of her life, so that it precludes her from completely leaving it in the past and becoming that viable, productive citizen that we want her to be. If we were to label people, and if that label stayed with them once and forever, well, we might as well leave everybody in jail, no matter what it is that they did, because we're actually increasing the potential for them to become somebody who hurts us in the end.
Mac, what do you think?
Well, when I was 16, when I was 11, I started thinking about appointment to the Naval Academy. When I was 16, I wanted to go to the Naval Academy, and I served as an officer in the Marine Corps. So I am pretty much the person I was at 16, because I knew that if I went out and broke the law, it was going to screw up the rest of my life. I understand what the DA is saying. And believe me, I do believe in rehabilitation. But just be aware of the language that's sometimes used. You know, this girl was not a kid. She was somebody who stole a car.
Sure.
And I don't care why she stole it. She stole it. And you're not going to sell it to a lot of people that we need to coddle the kids that can't follow the law and give them breaks when most people do obey the law and they don't understand why.
But let me ask you just a quick question, Mac, and I know Rhea wants to say something as well. But she broke the law, absolutely. We're talking about Grand Theft Auto. But since that time, she has not broken the law. She has been working to turn her life around. In many ways, she has. Do you not give her credit for that?
Well, hard cases make bad law. You know, she is. She's somebody who has benefited. And that makes it difficult for me, because I would like to be able to do something for her. Maybe the best thing for her to do is when she applies to say, as a juvenile, I screwed up, I turned myself around, and here I am. Consider the whole person, because what she said, people think I'm lying when they find out my records. Then don't put yourself in that position. Be upfront.
Let me give...
A lot of people are willing to forgive if you're willing to put yourself out there for them.
Okay, Mac, I appreciate
it.
Okay, no, I appreciate the back and forth. I appreciate the call. I know Rhea wants to say something else.
Well, I just want to reiterate that this certainly isn't about coddling individuals, and that nothing that we're talking about today is taking away from the ability of the system to put the person in supervision and hold them accountable for their actions. This is saying that once you've been held accountable for your actions, that you have the right to now move past it. That what we want out of these youth who are involved in the juvenile justice system is not a lifetime of punishment. What we want from them is a lifetime of improvement. We want them to be able to move on and succeed and become contributing members of society. And unfortunately, what I think is happening across the board is that, you know, while you may be able to say that there are people out there that will take the whole story and forgive, there are a lot of people that won't. And I don't want to rely on you know, knowing that there might be some people out there that will.
Mac, thanks for the call. Picking up on what he said, George, I mean, if using Dina as an example, if she, you know, goes to a job and she says, oh, by the way, or let me tell you before we even have this interview, you know, I served time for Grand Theft Auto. Would that, I mean, the law is what the law is in Florida. I mean, wouldn't that in any way help her, do you think?
Well, that's putting me in the shoes of some employer.
It is. I'm sorry. A very unfair question to you.
But I can tell you, as somebody who is actually involved with hiring in the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office, if it's on the application, if there's complete disclosure, that person has an opportunity to get a job. If they don't put it on the application, if it does appear that they're trying to hide something, then that certainly weighs against them.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get, looks like Allison from Atlantic City to join us. Hi, Allison. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I would like you to speak to the fact that even if you get the record sealed or expunged, and we've had some experience with this, and it's been like $12,000 for lawyers and experts, and through the sealing of part, it's still on Google. Is there any mechanism to get that off the Internet? Because you can have everything sealed, but it's still there for everybody to see forever.
It's a good question. Let me give Rhea a chance to respond.
Yes, that's a really big issue. And as I mentioned before, because we're living in this digital age, information is so readily accessible. And there are some states, Pennsylvania is not one of them, New Jersey is not one of them, but there are some states that actually sell record information to private companies to store that then put it on, you know, private databases or even public databases online, and then it's even more accessible. So even when a record is expunged, you can't even recall that information because you have no idea where it went. So one of the things that we're undertaking in the coming months is a study looking at where records go and trying to work with forensic IT specialists to really look at what happens to a record once it's out there in the world and follow it to find out what's going on. And hopefully that will result in some reform measures as well.
Well, we do live in the digital age, George. I mean, information lives on, it seems, forever.
And so even outside of this context, where we're talking about official records, people ought to be cognizant of what they put out there on the
Amen
world wide
that.
Web.
Amen to that. Do you think this report will make a difference?
I think it's going to be really well received. I think it helps each jurisdiction to take a look at itself. It's work that they might not do on their own. And so I'm very appreciative of the work that Rhea has done in the Juvenile Law Center.
Well, I'm appreciative of the fact that both of you joined us in studio here. George Mosey, Jr., thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
You're welcome.
And Rhea Sahasha, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And she's an attorney with the Juvenile Law Center. And the author of this new report we've been talking about is called Failed Policies, Forfeited Futures. And she's an attorney with the Juvenile Law Center, which is here in Philadelphia, leads its Second Chances Initiative. Also, George Mosey, Jr., Deputy District Attorney in charge of the Juvenile Division at the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show. It's produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us.